Morning. Well, things are a little slow around Joel's house right now, but I'm told, don't miss it, because on day three, Joel finds out that non-essential media includes desperate housewives, and he doesn't take it well. He kind of gets snotty with Sarah, and he gets ugly. So, we don't want to miss that next week. Last week we started looking at this idea of room to breathe, and we looked at the fact that we live lives that are just plugged in and connected 24/7. We are just constantly wired. We constantly have information coming at us. But that it's not just an information deal, but that also our entire lives, just we've squeezed out any healthy room to breathe. And we took a look at how our Creator has designed us for this rhythm in our life, this six on and one off, six on and one off. And so we took a look at what a healthy rhythm looks like for a life that has room to breathe within the context of a week. What we're going to do today is we're going to continue that, but we're going to take a look now within an individual day. What might a life look like that has healthy rhythm as our Creator's designed us as it flows out during a 24-hour period as opposed to a whole week? And we're going to do this today by taking a look at a roughly, a 24-hour period in Jesus' life. And we're going to take a look at that and how this rhythm flowed out in his day. Now, I know that the minute that I say that we're going to take a look at, this thing of having room to breathe and healthy kind of rhythm and schedule, that when we hear, we're going to take a look at Jesus, as kind of the model for that, a lot of us, kind of check out on that, because we think about, well, first of all, I'm not sure where I am on this Jesus guy anyway, not the same place you guys are anyway, but even if he was God, like you guys talk about here, I mean, if that was the case, he probably had a few more tools at his disposal to deal with an overcrowded life, than I do. He probably has maybe a few things to lean into that I can't, we tend to think about that Jesus, well, if he had, a crowded life, well, he had maybe a couple meetings booked on a day that were overlapping. He could just say some kind of magic spell. He's a spiritual guru. He'd just say this magic spell and one of the meetings would go away. Or, if he was trying to pick the kids up from school and got stuck in a traffic jam, he could just cast all of Field Zirtle into the lake of hell for eternal damnation. I've tried that. Doesn't work for me. Or he might be able to, just kind of maybe twitch his nose and make the minivan, kind of teleport, magically to some other place. Not quite the picture we get of the rhythm of Jesus' life and the demands on him in the Bible. I think that picture actually comes more from old Bewitched reruns, than anything else. Picture that we get from the Bible of Jesus' life was that when he came down and he took on flesh and blood, he did it in a way that he could connect with us in our human nature, that he could experience all the same things that we did and all the same challenges we had. So he took on the constraints of a human body, and he had to live within a 24-hour day. He didn't have any other extra hours in his day than we do. He had to live within the natural constraints of the human condition. And so that meant that he had to breathe, he had to sleep, he had to eat, he had to rest, all those kind of things. And so the rhythm of his day was one of which, by taking on this human form, he experienced all the same challenges, all the same problems, all the same temptations that we do. And when we look there, what we see is that he had significant challenges and significant demands on his day, that kind of came to him. We tend to think that, maybe he could, kind of magically get out in some way. He couldn't. He had the same challenge. So much so that there is one place in the Bible where it talks about that Jesus and his closest disciples around him, they were so busy, they didn't even have time to eat. And Jesus had to call a timeout and go do something about that. And there's numerous times where it talks about that things were getting so frenzied that Jesus cut away and he went off to a solitary place, or he kind of cut away from all the action. So we see that he had all these demands on his life. And so what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at one passage of roughly kind of a 24-hour day within Jesus' life and see if maybe there's a model that flows out of that that would tell us maybe a little bit about the rhythm that we need to have for our life. We're going to be taking a look today at this day, and it's within the Gospel of Mark in the Bible. And, just to remind you, the Gospels in the Bible, they're the four historical records of Jesus' life on this earth. Gospel of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. We're going to be taking a look within the book of Mark that's collected in our Bible at this one day that Jesus had. Now, a little bit of context of what was going on here before we read this. What had happened was Jesus' ministry was starting to become very public. And it was really starting to explode of kind of the stuff that he was doing. And he was challenging the religious establishment. They were becoming upset. He was healing people. He was teaching. And he was teaching against a lot of the legalistic kind of stuff that the religious establishment was teaching at the time. And people were finding this freedom. And the news had started to get out. And so crowds would flock to where Jesus was because people wanted to learn truth. Or they wanted to be healed. Or they wanted to be freed. So Jesus travels to this one town, and he starts teaching, and he starts healing people. And incredible things happen. And what we're picking up here is the day after now. He's been there, had this full day of all this stuff going on, all these amazing things, people being healed, miracles. And now we're picking this up right off the skirts of that, the very next verse in the Bible after all that's happened. And we're in the book of Mark, chapter 1, verse 35 to 38. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Simon and his companions went to look for him. And when they found him, they exclaimed, "Everyone is looking for you." Jesus replied, "Let us go somewhere else to the nearby villages so I can preach there also. That is why I have come." So we see in the middle of all this frenzy of this activity that Jesus has taken some time away of that. This was not that he didn't have kind of complete closure. All the people weren't healed. All the people hadn't been taught or anything. But yet we see this passage of what that next day looked like in the middle of this. I think sometimes we could think, oh, you know, my schedule, you know, it's so unique. I am so uniquely stressed. I have, you know, just jam-packed day. And, you know, how could anyone else understand that, much less somebody who lived, you know, back in ancient Palestine? And when you think about it, you look at the demands that Jesus had on his day. Sometimes he weren't even able to eat and all this kind of stuff. You know, imagine, the important stuff on your day planner. You think that's important. Imagine if you were, let's say, the savior of the universe. Okay? Now, for some of us, it's a little easier trip there to imagine that we are the savior of the universe than others. But if we'd all, you know, kind of go there for a moment, imagine you're the savior of the universe, what kind of stuff you look like on your day planner? You know, I mean, you just imagine, you know, kind of opening up Jesus' day planner. It's like, oh man, you know, I got this big lunch meeting going on today, and I know they're not going to bring enough food again. I'm going to have to do that loaves and fishes thing, you know, and that's always, you know. And then I got this 3:15 thing where I'm going to be throwing the Pharisees out of the temple courts. That never goes well, you know. And then I got that stupid strap on my sandal keeps breaking. I'm going to have to drop that off at the shop. You know, Jesus had a lot of really important stuff that he had to do, and he had all the daily little stuff as well that come with just one part and parcel with the human condition. And in that, in all of these important things, and all these important priorities, and all the little stuff that had to be done, where does he start his day? You know, pull that verse back up for a second. Where does Jesus start his day? Now, a lot of Bible scholars, when I've heard this, they would say, well, where does he start his day? And it's obvious. He starts in prayer. He starts his day off with prayer. Not quite true. Not quite true. You know, because it doesn't say very early in the morning while it was still dark, Jesus prayed. It says very early in the morning while it was still dark, Jesus got up. Jesus got up. So what's that mean? He got up. He must have been down. He was sleeping. Jesus was sleeping. You know, something that we miss is that, you know, Jesus, every night of his public ministry and every night of his life, with few exceptions, came to the end of the night and all the sick people hadn't been healed, all the hungry people hadn't been fed, all the hurting people hadn't been comforted, all the people believing lies hadn't had truth spoken to them, all these kind of things. And Jesus responded apparently by going to bed. He responded by going to bed. With few exceptions of the Bible, it appears that he responded by going to bed. So his day, you know, started where? From a place of rest. He started from a place of rest. Because he had took on the limitations of a human form, he knew that a healthy rhythm of rest was necessary if he was going to bring his best to people during the day. He started from a place of rest. Now, we're certainly, you know, probably at least in the last 5 years, we've been learning a lot about sleep cycles, about rest, and we've been learning a lot about how everyone needs this healthy rhythm of rest in their life, healthy rhythm of sleep. And with very few exceptions, when you compromise that, the average person needs at least, what, 7.5 hours or so, or even more? Very few exceptions. When you compromise that, your body will it'll take a toll on your body. You will pay the price, sometimes short term, sometimes long term. You cannot abuse your body by denying that it needs sleep. And so most of us, you know, we've realized that. Some of us still abuse that rhythm a little bit. But nonetheless, we've realized that we do need sleep. The problem is, though, that I think that we deny, you know, kind of another aspect to rest as well. Because I think when we think about rest, you know, we think about, okay, there's sleep. And then also when we think about time away from our work, we tend to sometimes think about the word rest synonymously with the word leisure. You know, that I have time away from my work, I not only sleep, but that I also, you know, do all this activity. And so our time away from work can sometimes be so frenzied and so full of activity that really the overall impact is less restful than if we had gone to work. Now, I want to be careful. I am not saying that high adrenaline kind of leisure activities are not fun and they're not good. They are fun and they are good. What I am so, you know, I'm not telling you that, you know, so don't, you know, if you don't, you'd love to skydive, if you really get charged with that, you know, don't go skydiving, or, you know, don't, you know, go run with the bulls in Pamplona if that's what you enjoy, or don't, you know, take field zertal at 5:30, you know, or whatever that it might be, that you kind of get a charge. What I am saying, though, is we need to be very careful not to confuse that, not to confuse activity and leisure with rest. Leisure is good. Leisure is great. It's fun. But rest is necessary. Some of you remember this summer. We had one of my favorite authors, Gordon MacDonald, come and speak at Summer Nights at Next Level. And he wrote just a classic book in this area. I don't know, it was about 20 years ago, 25 years ago, something like that. Classic book. I cannot highly recommend it enough if you're struggling with what a rhythm looks like in your life and trying to get control of your life. It's called Ordering Your Private World. And in that, he talks about this confusion that happens between leisure and rest and how we need to be very careful about that. Here's what he says. Leisure and amusement may be enjoyable, but they are to the private world of the individual like cotton candy to the digestive system. They provide a momentary lift, but they will not last. These alone will not restore the soul in the way that we crave. We need to be very careful not to confuse leisure with rest. We can enjoy them both, but we absolutely need rest. The problem is, sometimes we can so synonymously define rest with leisure that we never end up with any real breaks of rest in our life. I know for me, this has been this is one of my kind of Achilles heel that I have to really have had to learn and grow through in sometimes in very clumsy ways in my life of when I had time away from work, I would fill it with so much intense activity that often I would come back to work the next week and I would be just as drained, you know, as I was before because I defined time away from work with all this activity and I was doing just as much doing there as anywhere. And this was a place actually caused some tension early in my marriage with Nancy. Because Nancy, while she enjoys doing stuff, I mean, she'll go kayaking with me and she loves that. She enjoys doing stuff. She also knows there's this kind of healthy rhythm of life. She also needs rest. And there was a bit of a rub early in our marriage on this. Particularly, I remember some of the first couple of vacations that we ever went on to together, Nancy and I. Remember one we went on very early in our marriage. Didn't have kids or anything. I think it was in the first year of our marriage, went on vacation. We were visiting some family down in Florida, and I decided, hey, wouldn't it be cool while we're down there? Why don't we drive over to Orlando, and let's go to Disney. You know, let's go to Disney for a couple days. It'd be cool, you know, just the two of us. It'd be fun. And so Nancy said, wow, that sounds fun. Let's do that. So now anybody that has ever been to Disney down in Orlando, you know, I think we're going to be there for like 2.5 days, something like that. You know that 2.5 days is not nearly enough to experience, you know, even half of what's down there. You just get, you know, a small sample for that. And most people, you know, kind of realize that, you know, and plan accordingly. I'm big on planning, but I took that actually as a challenge. I took that as a challenge. I said, you know what? What would every young bride want? What's their dream? Well, to have the most efficient, effective, productive Disney vacation ever. I was going to deliver that for her. So I did the research. I did the research. You know, I loved to plan. So I went out, I bought books, I read all these books about Disney, read magazines about Disney. I scheduled interviews with friends of mine that had been there in the last 6 months, asked them, you know, kind of about those things. I downloaded stuff off the web. I got maps of the parks and schematics of where all the rides were, maps. And while the Disney folks refused to release traffic flow information to me, I was able to basically, you know, plan out what our days would look like loading into there, which rides we wanted to go to, and what would be the most efficient order, knowing the basic flow of people during the day, what would be the most efficient order to do the park. I even scheduled which were the most efficient bathrooms to take during the day, you know, during the different times. Yeah, I know. You're like, wow, where can I get me one of these guys? Wouldn't that, you know? Girls, they're out there, okay? They're out there. You got to find them. You got to find them. So, did all this planning, you know, kind of, and what it basically was, it basically represented a strategy of starting early in the morning, starting from the back of the park and moving in a counterclockwise fashion against the flow of the crowds during the day. You know, so I planned it all out, including the bathrooms. Now, here, just to show you what a romantic I was, I know that my wife's, you know, much more laid back and casual about this. I decided the best thing to do would be not tell her any of this. You know, I was going to surprise her. I did. She was a little startled when the alarm went off at 6:15 the first morning. Nonetheless, she adjusted. You know, she kind of worked with me on this. And we got to the park. And we got to the park before it had opened, well before it had opened. Now, the most concerning thing about this was that when we got there, you know, an hour before the park was going to open, we weren't the only ones. There were hundreds, there were like 200, 250, 300 people who also had the same plan. And they were all there waiting right at the rope that goes across the entrance of the park with the security guards kind of standing there holding back the hordes. You know, so they're there. Now, the most concerning thing for me was almost everyone else there had kids. And they had strollers and stuff, which put them in a much better position for kind of elbowing us out of the space right by the rope. So they were able to jockey for position much better than us and look kind of smug about it as they pushed us out of their way with their little double strollers and stuff, you know, out front. So they were feeling pretty good about it. I tell you, once the rope dropped, though, those kids were nothing but dead weight for those folks. Nothing but dead weight. We crushed them. We crushed those families to the first ride, and we maintained our lead for the rest of the day. That was incredible. It was incredible. Not without glitch, though. I think we had been executing a fairly successful campaign around the northern perimeter of the park when I think we got to about Pirates of the Caribbean. And Nancy, you know, requested an unscheduled water break. Unscheduled water break, you know, and she's a nurse. She's a nurse, so she started pointing out certain onset of early signs of dehydration, you know, and things like that. I was like, okay, all right, you're a nurse, you're going to play that card. Okay, fine, you know, out of my capacity, I said, we'll take this unscheduled water break. And we did. And you know what? I think it's a testament to how solid my plan was. And we took more, believe it or not, we took more than one unscheduled water break during the day, and we still accomplished the critical path by 3 o'clock that day. Well ahead of all objectives. So I was feeling pretty good about this experience. I was feeling pretty good about it. That night, though, I started to realize pretty soon that Nancy was not kind of quite sharing the same elation over having crushed the critical path and all those other families for this day. She's not feeling the same elation. And one of the early signs was she was just drinking water nonstop. She just couldn't stop drinking water. And then it was somewhere in between her dry heaves and full onset of vomiting that she indicated to me that the vacation wasn't working for her, you know. I realized through that what she said was, you know, I like doing these things, but I need a rest. I need some room in here. I need, you know, some rhythm, you know, this kind of rest. And I realized, that was one of my early times of realizing that I had exclusively defined taking a break as activity and leisure. And in addition to that, there needs to be rest. We are created. We need to rest. We need to rest. And rest does not just involve sleep. It also involves times where we have inactivity. We need to rest. It's the way God had created us. And when Jesus took on human form and these constraints of a body, he realized the same thing. And so his day didn't start with prayer. His day started from a place of rest. He got up. Then we see what he did. So back in verse 35 here. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. And we see this again and again in Jesus' life. We see these things where it says at very early in the morning, he went off to a solitary place, or he took a couple people with him and went off. We see this thing of him getting away from the crowds and getting away from the activity and getting alone. And very often the description is that he did it very early in the morning. Now, I don't know exactly what this prayer was he's doing in the morning. I don't know if this was him spending 2 hours praying to his Father. You know, I don't know if it was 2 hours. I don't know if maybe it was 5 minutes where it was just kind of one of these, God, you got to help me today. Simon Peter is driving me nuts. I'm going to strangle the dude. You know, I don't know if it was kind of one of those. But he consistently started his day. He moved from a place of rest and then he went to a place not of doing. And certainly he had a lot of things that needed to be done. Not doing, but a place of being that he would just be. He knew that in human form, he would need to kind of calibrate his day from the start. See, the fact is we not only need rest, but we need to be. We need to start our day from a place of being. What it somehow tells us that this day does not rise and fall on how well I'm able to do things. Now, the fact is we bring our best to everything. We bring our best to work, we bring our best to people, and we try our hardest. But we know that in the end, it does not rest on our doing. It rests on our being, that I am created in the image of God. And from that confidence, I then go and I do. And what happens when we do this, even if it's just 5 minutes at the beginning of the morning, what it seems to do is it seems to kind of subtly tell us, I am not the master of the universe. This universe is well in the control of the creator of the universe. I do not need to control everything. I can start from being. And then from that, then I can move into doing, and it's from a place of rest, and it's from a place of strength. Fact is, we need to just be. Now, for a lot of people, they find very early morning is the time for this. Very early morning. And I find a lot of people, they say, you know what, when I do this, even if it's just 5 minutes, maybe it's 15 minutes, and maybe I read my Bible a little bit, you know, whatever that it is, they find that it works most effectively for them if they do this first thing in the morning. For me, sometimes, you know, but not always. You know, I find, you know, kind of different parts during the day. I will tell you, though, that I've found for me that when I don't do this, when I don't prioritize it as the first thing in the morning, when I don't, the longer that I wait during the day, the more of a challenge it is. The more of a challenge it is to do this. That there's just something about the way our world's designed that the longer we're into the rhythm of our day, the more things are kind of stacked against us of this happening. And you would be amazed at the challenge you'll find, even finding 5 minutes in your day just to kind of recalibrate and say, God, I need your help with today, and I know that you are in control of our universe. Just the challenge, if you don't do that right away, it's amazing the diversity of kind of distractions I get during my day when I'm trying to carve out, even if it's just a little 5 minutes or 10 minutes. A while back, I was having one of those days where I was, I knew that, you know, during this week I was going to need to have some conversations with people that were things they didn't necessarily want to hear. It's not going to be easy. And I was having one of those days, and I had a meeting coming up over by Alt Park. And I went over there, and I had a little bit extra time. I was running a little early, so I had about 10 or 15 minutes before my meeting. And I decided, you know what, I haven't had that time today yet. I'm just going to kind of still myself. I want to just be, and I want to just ask God for his help during the day. And I want to ask, you know, usually, you know, I ask something along the lines of, God, I want to see you today. I want to see you, not just people. When I look at people, I want to see Jesus. Would you please just help me see Jesus? So, you know, I want to have one of those times, and there's this favorite spot I have in Alt Park where this kind of bench, and then there's a little bit of an area, and then there's a stone wall, and then you look out over on the valley. And so I was going to sit in that bench and just kind of have this recalibration time for my day to just kind of be. And so I sat down, had about 10 minutes for this, and I kid you not, it was like 1 minute into this. 1 minute into this that this woman jogs up. And she asked me, you know, in a very nice, polite way, she says, hey, do you mind if I do my Tai Chi right here? You know, right in between the bench, you know, and where I'm looking out of the valley. And I don't really know what Tai Chi is, but, you know, nonetheless, this is a public park, you know, who am I to mop? Like, absolutely, you know, feel free, you know, go ahead. So, you know, I'm sitting on the bench and saying, God, Jesus, you know, I really want to see you today. And she takes off her jacket, and at that point, I start realizing that Tai Chi must be Chinese for erotic stretching, you know, is basically what it means. Because she starts, you know, she kind of gets right in front of the bench, and then she starts doing all this kind of like, you know, and she, I'm like, well, I saw plenty. I don't think it was Jesus, though, you know, that, and I find over and over again, you know, during my day, the distractions, they are designed against this happening. They're designed against this happening. We need to start our day from just being. For a lot of people, that works best if they start it right early in the morning. And we just recalibrate ourselves. And we realize, I am not the master of the universe. And that gives us this confidence by which we move into our day. And here's where that kind of confidence, when we move from a place of rest to a place of being and then into our doing, look at where it takes us. Verses 37 and 38. So, Jesus started his day from a place of rest, and then he got time alone, and he was just prayed, and he was able to just be. And then from that, because of all the activity that had been happening the day before, all these people being healed, all this stuff, look what happens. Then, Simon and his companions went to look for him. And when they found him, they exclaimed, "Everyone is looking for you." Jesus replied, "Let us go somewhere else to the nearby villages so I can preach there also." And we find here what happens. So, been a lot of people healed, great teaching going on, all this kind of stuff, and all these people clamoring for Jesus' attention. And what happens? Simon and some of Jesus' closest companions, they come to him and say, "Hey, all these people, they're back. There's more people. They need you. All these people, everyone is looking for you." And how does Jesus respond? "Oh, everyone's looking for me? They need me? Hurting people? Oh, they need me? Oh, let's go." Not quite. Not quite. What does it say? It says Simon and his companions came to him and said, "Everyone is looking for you." And Jesus said, "Let us go somewhere else. Let us go somewhere else." You know, the fact of the matter is, there were people that hadn't been healed, people that hadn't been fed, people that hadn't been taught. And Jesus responded by saying, "You know what? I'm out of here. Let's go somewhere else." Again and again, we see in the Bible where Jesus said no to people. He had compassion on them. He was there to serve them. But nonetheless, he had a confidence in what the mission of every one of his days were. And he knew in that moment, what I need to do today, there's somewhere else that I need to go. And because of that, Jesus said no to people so that he could say yes to the greater goal and the mission that he had in his life. I think for most of us, you know, during this series, this was not a place we were expecting this thread to go when we started pulling it, of how do I get room to breathe in my life. But I think for most of us, I think the defining factor in our life of why we do not have room to breathe is that we do not enjoy saying no. We do not enjoy saying no, and we don't say no. When the fact is, if we look at Jesus, we need to enjoy no. Now, let me be careful. It's not that we enjoy the fact that somebody wants something from us or something they feel they need and they don't get it. We don't enjoy that. What we enjoy, though, is we enjoy the fact that we have a confidence of what God has called us to do in our life, even to the very day we have a priority to it, and that priority is something that only we can define between us and God, and other people are not in a better place to define that for us. And so we can enjoy no, because when we're saying no, we're saying yes to things that we have a great deal of confidence and hold in very high esteem. And so we need to enjoy no. I know for a long time in my life, I felt like I could only bring out no, whether it was a dinner invitation, needed to be a meeting, or something like that. I could only say no if I had a schedule conflict. So if somebody invited me to something, I need to go to something, meet or whatever, and I had something else already scheduled, I could say, "Oh, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm already booked, you know, that time." And what I found when I had to move into was I found that I had to get to a place where I needed to say no even when I didn't have something else scheduled, just because I knew the rhythm of that day or I knew the rhythm of that week. And I had to get to a point where I enjoyed saying no. I didn't apologize for it. I didn't feel guilt or shame about it. We still need to stay flexible when there's a crisis, somebody's hurting, somebody that's close to us, we need to be there for them, but those need to be the exceptions. And the rule needs to be that I have a confidence, and I've started my day from a day of rest and being, that I have a confidence of where I'm spending my time. Because the fact is, if we don't, other people will define where our time goes for us. The fact is, we need to enjoy no. Now, dirty little secret. If no is not a regular part of your vocabulary, you will need to know that if you have a confidence in where you're to be spending your time, and that includes being flexible to have compassion for a moment of a crisis or things like that, but within the full scheme of your life, you have confidence enough to be able to say no to people, you need to know that someone will always get ticked off. Someone's always going to get mad. And here it is, what I think is the number one reason why most of us in here do not have room to breathe. Because the greatest nightmare, our worst nightmare in our life is not that we would live a life where we wouldn't be all that God created us to be. Our worst nightmare is that we would experience the displeasure of somebody else. Our worst nightmare is we would say no to someone and we would get anger back or mild displeasure. You need to know that if you have that confidence and you say no, someone is always going to get ticked off because they're not getting what they want, which is what they think they need. It's always going to happen. One example of that. Last year, leading into the holiday season, we were looking at the rhythm of things around Crossroads and all that was going on leading up and through, what was it, 7 Christmas Eve services that we did last year? We were looking at it, and we have a thing here on staff at Crossroads of it's all hands on deck during the holidays. So nobody gets a vacation. Nobody travels leading up through Christmas Eve night, through that night, because we need to be here and we need to bring our best and be here for our community. So we have all hands on deck, and it often flows for our key volunteers as well. They step up and they do that same thing as well. So we were looking at what the rhythm of the month of December would look like, in particular that week, and all the planning and the scheduling of volunteers and the planning of services and all that stuff. Much less just Christmas Eve day of the 7 services and the cumulative, 10 or 11 hours that we were all going to be here for. We looked at all that, and then we looked at the fact that then our key staff and our volunteers would go away, after, 8 o'clock or 8:30 or whatever it was, Christmas Eve night, and they would get, wouldn't be able to travel to their families that night. They would get maybe a 24-hour, maybe a 48-hour window to breathe of Christmas, and that would be it. Because then they would have to then be nailing down things for the service the next weekend. And so they'd have to be scheduling volunteers, making sure the slots are filled, planning the service, all that kind of stuff. And they would get only like a 24-hour, maybe a 48-hour room to breathe into Christmas. And we said, you know what? Unacceptable. Unacceptable. And so we did this scandalous thing. Against all, kind of counsel that we got, we did this scandalous thing and that we canceled services the weekend after Christmas. We canceled services. And people told you, experts told you can't do that. You don't understand. Do you understand year-end giving patterns? That at the end of the calendar year, people like to maybe give a little bit extra for tax purposes and things like that. You're going to miss out on one of the most, lucrative offerings that happens in a year. And you're going to miss out on that whole week's of income for the year and all that kind of stuff. And we said, you know what? Realize that. But you know what? Our families are not for sale. Our staff are not for sale here. This is unacceptable. So we canceled the weekend services for the weekend after Christmas. And people got ticked off. Whoa. Now, I'm not saying that couldn't say, wow, that's weird. I've never heard of that before. Why are we doing that? Or, oh man, I'm disappointed because I had family coming in. I really wanted them to experience this. That's all fine. And those are all very, very healthy conversations. We had them ourselves on staff before we made the decision to do it. No, what I'm talking about is we had people that were ticked off. I mean, this was like break out all the heavy vocabulary, you know, and the all the nasty adjectives, and we don't work hard, you know, and all this kind of stuff, you know, and writing letters, and I would get these letters about this, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And what was interesting was at the same time I was getting these letters from people that were ticked off, I was getting these phone calls from other churches in town. And basically the conversation would go like, hey, we heard, you're doing what? You're doing what? And I would say, yeah, you know this, and describe to them. And I would get this reaction to them on the phone that was just like, almost as if I was describing like this magical world where if they found the right unicorn, they could fly to it one day, you know? Kind of like, oh, what a concept. And I said, you know what? I don't know if your rhythm of your church is anything like ours. I highly recommend you do this. Highly recommend you do this. We think that it's just a healthy thing. But you know what? If you don't, would you kind of give me a heads up? Because I got some folks I would love to send your way, you know, for that. And who knows? Maybe they'll stick. You know, we'll see. And maybe they did. Or maybe they're sitting in here seething right now. I'm not sure, you know, kind of, you know, which one that is. They'll let me know, I'm sure. So, you know. You know what? Maybe they did, but you know what? I kind of hope if that was the reason that they did, you know, because we're doing it again this year. We're doing it again this year. We said, you know what? We need room to breathe. Folks, we're not canceling church. We're canceling church services. There is a difference. We are the body of Christ, and we are out there no matter what. But for a healthy rhythm, a healthy room to breathe for our life, we feel like that's a necessary call, not only for our staff, but for all the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of volunteers who make this thing happen around here. Now, I want to say, if you are one of those people out there and you're sitting in the shadows right now, you know, and you're going to send me a letter, I just want to let you know. You know what? If I start getting the nasty letters, we're going to roll this theme out, and we're canceling Thanksgiving weekend. We're going to do President's Day weekend, Bastille Day, Flying Pig weekend, you name it. We're canceling. There is a rhythm that God has called us to, and it leads us to a place of confidence where we can have the confidence to say no, even when it experiences other people's displeasure. There's this old saying within church circles, you know, that God has a wonderful, God loves you and has a wonderful plan for your life. And the inside joke is that often, you know, people say, God loves you and I have a wonderful plan for your life. And so we're surrounded by these people in life who will tell us, I have the best agenda for your life. I have the plan. And the fact is, at the deepest root of this, for most of us, is the fact that at the last place in our life, we feel completely unequipped and unable, and we never do say no to people in power. We never say no to power. And for you, you know, maybe in your life, you know, it's, you know, that person in power, you know, is your boss. And I'm not saying we don't show respect, we don't honor their authority, all those things. What I am telling you, though, is so few people get to the place in life where they feel the confidence of what God's plan is in their life that they will say no to someone in power over them because they know that that's the right call in their life. What I'm talking about is showing respect for authority, bringing all to our work, working as hard as we can, respecting and honoring authority. But if that authority continually pushes us to a place in our life that is against the healthy plan that God has in our life, we need to say no to power. Because when we don't, what happens is we are costing our children, we're costing our families, we're costing our friends, we're costing our spouse, because we don't have the guts to say no to power. And the fact is, when we don't, the toll is taken. In Order in Your Private World, Gordon MacDonald talks about the danger of what happens when we don't get out front and we're not proactive in saying no and we're not proactive in making the call of where we're going to be spending our time. And take a look how he talks about the warning of what happens when we don't do that. He says, unseized time comes under the influence of dominant people in my world. Unseized time comes under the influence of dominant people in my world. If I am not proactive about seizing my time in a God-honoring way, dominant people in my world will do it for me. Well, I will have no lack of people in my world who will then tell me where my time needs to be spent. It's a fact. The fact is, this is the natural flow of life, that if you are not proactive, if you are not proactive about being confident of seeking what God's plan in your life and letting your life flow from that and seizing your time, the most dominant people in your life will be demanding even more time of your life next year than they are this year. That will happen. Now, for some people, you know, that dominant person, you know, is, you know, our boss. For some of us, you know, to be honest, it's a three-year-old. You know, but the fact is, we all have these people that are dominant people in our life, and we need to be careful that they're not pushing us to a place that's against the healthy boundary that God created for us. The fact is, God will never, never call you to violate one of His commands to fulfill another. We need to actually enjoy no because of what it enables us to say yes to. And then, you know, one last thing. One last thing here on this that I would I wouldn't be telling the full story if I didn't show you where it ended here in verse 28. So what Jesus says, you know, so He's come from a place of rest, then a place of being, and then now He's stepped out in confidence. He's able to say no to people. And then what does He do all that for? Does He do all that for so He can go be by Himself and get more me time? No, it says He does all these things so I can preach there also. That's why I've come. Jesus is so confident in His mission that He does all these things. Why? So I can serve others. So I can be free to serve others. You know, I talked last week about how, you know, the first place most of us go when we hear this kind of thing about having a healthier rhythm is guilt. And we feel guilty that we don't have it. And then but I think the second place that a lot of us go, that a lot of us are probably kind of somewhere in between those two today, the next place that sometimes we go is we say, okay, yeah, I feel guilty about it. Okay, I need to do something about it. And what do I need to do? What do I need to do? I don't have room to breathe in my life. I need to get room to breathe. Well, I need to cut out the serving of other people stuff. I need to scramble for some room to breathe. And I want to be careful here. I'm not just talking about serving at crossroads here. You know, although for some people, you know, for all of us, there's this healthy principle that where I'm receiving from, I'm part of that community and I serve. You know, and some people might react, how dare they? They're doing a Room to Breathe series at the same time they're making this pitch for people to get involved and serve. You know, what's up with that? I find it interesting that when we look at our weeks, a lot of us will say, well, I got 168 hours to my week and I don't have room to breathe. What do? I cut out that 1 or 2 hours out of that 168 that's about somebody other than myself. And we have a question that we need to ask ourselves, how much of our life is going to revolve around us? Because there is no such thing as having a healthy pattern. You will never have healthy room to breathe in your life unless part of your rhythm is serving others. It is impossible. It's just part of the rhythm of who we are made to be. So we start from a place of rest, and that gives us strength. And then we move into a place of being. And that gives us confidence in our day that, one, this universe does not lay on my shoulders, and two, I have the confidence of knowing that I've submitted my plans to God. And from that confidence, then we're able to say no. And we do all this so that we can get to a place where we're able to serve others. So what I want to do now, you know, similar to last week, just with a few minutes that we have here, is I just want to take a couple minutes and give us a little room to breathe here. Give us just a chance to kind of, you know, just inhale and exhale. If you would, you know, you just want to close your eyes with me. Last week, I asked you to reflect on what your last 30 days had been like. And right now, I just want you to reflect on, what has your last 24 hours been like? Have you had the rest? Have you been able to move from a place of rest and strength? For some of us in here, the most spiritual thing we could do when we leave here right now is go home and take a big nap because we're exhausted. Have you been moving and flowing in your life from a place of rest? And have you had any time during your day, even if it's just 5 minutes, any time to ask for God's help and to recognize that He's in control? Let's just think about the last 24 hours. God, we want that rhythm. We want room to breathe. My God, it's amazing that something that should come so natural to us, just breathing, is sometimes the very thing that we could ignore. God, we pray that that You would make our life follow Your rhythm, that everything that we do would be just like breathing. It would just be natural, this natural rhythm, that our work would flow just like breathing, that our play would be just like taking a breath, and that when we pray, when we are with You, that throughout our day, the rhythm of our day would be that we would be able to be with You and pray just as natural as our breathing.